Welcome to the Chase MedSearch Podcast, the place where we dive deep into the medical device sales industry by discussing the current trends, timeless philosophies, and amazing experiences that shape our niche of the industry. Join me, Jordan Chase, on a guided tour as I speak with established sales leaders and professionals as they share stories that will help you get in, stay in, and thrive in your medical device sales career. Let's start the show. Welcome back to the Chase MedSearch Podcast. Excited to be back with you this week and love doing these recordings and these sessions, get good feedback on them. We've got an audience of faithful listeners. I appreciate each and every one of you and try to bring you fresh content every week or every other week, and folks that we know in the industry and my firm that are exceptional people in and of their own right. They're entrepreneurs, there's high-performing medical reps, there's medical sales leaders, folks in marketing, folks that have done both. We've got one of them today on the show, and her name is Nile Harris. Nile and I had some crossover in our careers because we worked together at Medtronic, never, I don't think, in the same business unit, but she was a high flyer and progressively promoted multiple times within Medtronic and had a great career there before she branched out and did some other things. As of today, Nile is a life sciences strategist and a marketing executive consultant, equipping organizations to accelerate results and build high performing teams. And we're going to talk some about that today. And everyday warriors. Nile holds an MBA from the University of Michigan and a Master of Education from Yale University, where my daughter just completed a basketball camp there the other day. In 2020, Nile began sharing free educational content on LinkedIn. Her website is iamnileharris.com. I encourage you to visit it. And on her website, she provided advice to those who lost their jobs during the pandemic. And she has lots of really good advice. And I encourage folks to sign up for her newsletter as well, which you can do on her website. Now, welcome to the Chase MedSearch Podcast.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
It's great to reconnect with you after all these years.
It is. Yes. Our paths did cross at Medtronic. You're right. I don't believe we were in the same business unit, but I believe our paths crossed because I was really involved in recruiting to Medtronic.
Yes, you were. Yes. Mm-hmm. You were helping Medtronic build some of those high performance teams. And yeah, I just camped out at neuromodulation almost my entire career at Medtronic. I think I was supposed to rotate, and I think I made one corporate rotation and went right back to neuromodulation. I just always enjoyed it. But in any case, I'm excited to have you share your expertise with our audience today, because what's exciting about you is you have punched so many tickets in your career in terms of your experience. I mean, you've done the medical device thing, you've done the life sciences thing, you've worked with nonprofits, you've done a lot of different consulting engagements, and you know, I'm sure you've seen a lot of different iterations and models of ways people do things. And I'd love for you to draw on that today, because today I kind of want to isolate developing high performance teams. That's one topic of conversation I want to have with you today, if that's okay.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of my favorite topics, is how do you inspire people and bring out their best?
That's great. Well, I'm thinking of a particular type of individual for this conversation, and it's a very familiar type of person. And this is someone that's in the field sales organization, and they're a rep. They're not a manager. They may not even be an associate manager or whatever titles people have, but they're running a team of individuals. In neuromodulation, this is very common, where you have a rep that's got a territory of several million dollars, typically high patient touch in terms of responsibilities, that someone needs to be able to help manage patients and help physicians treat those patients. There's cases to cover, all kinds of things. And there's got to be a quarterback sort of supervising the revenue flow, and also has people either directly reporting to him or quasi reporting to him on this team, where he provides or she provides a lot of daily work direction. These could be clinical specialists, they could be associate reps. It's kind of the individual I'm thinking of. And anytime you're involved in something like that, there's always some challenges that tend to pop up. What have you seen in your career? And is that a model that you're kind of familiar with?
Yeah, it's definitely, I've definitely seen that. It's a model I am definitely familiar with. So in my 13 years at Medtronic, I was, you know, rotated through corporate and a couple business units, but I spent some time in the field. I spent about 3 years in the field, and it was very much this sort of lead through influence, right? You have to lead, but you don't have necessarily the authority. These people don't report to you. They're not a direct line, but you have to influence their work and you have to influence them in a way that they're going to listen and follow you, right? And I think that happens quite a bit when the structures are relatively flat. And so they don't want to have like a lot of hierarchy, but they're also at the same time trying to maintain the span of control so that somebody doesn't have too many people that they're directly responsible for, but they're also trying to give individuals a quote unquote at bat so they can sort of build that leadership muscle and prove that they could move into a leadership role. So my time in the field was as a therapy development specialist. And so this hybrid sort of sales and field marketing role where I very much had that model, right? I was responsible for my region, but I was also responsible for my area and another area where other therapy development specialists were coming to me for training, for help, for guidance on their MBOs. But they didn't report to me.
Yeah. And so you've got to influence them without authority.
Yeah.
How does someone begin to do that once they realize that their role has changed and now that's going to be more important because they can get work done themselves, but now they've got to also learn to get work done through others? Where do they start?
Yeah, getting that work done through others. Ooh. So you start with really understanding objectives. Like, what is it? What are the three things that we need to accomplish? And usually at this level, that's going to be rolled down to you. So you're not having to sort of figure that out in the same way maybe a director would or a sales leader would, right? So you're going to be given your objectives and hopefully they're pretty clear. But what's not going to be given to you is the how. And you have to figure out, start with the how and start with the what and figure out what it is that you need and what it is that you have. And then what are the gaps? And clear communication is so important, and I can't stress it enough. Being able to communicate, this is where we're going, this is how we're going to get there, this is what we're going to do to get there, and then understanding each person individually. And where I probably see people make the biggest mistake is that then they turn around and then will dictate to people, right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is where we're going. And one of my biggest lessons that I learned is you have to sell people. You know, you're not just trying to sell the customer. You have to sell your colleagues. You have to sort of invite people to follow you. You have to give people a reason to trust you and follow you. And you do that by building the personal relationships first. And one of the ways that I always sort of tried to do this, because when I worked in strategy, strategy and development at the corporate level. So I had a bunch of presidents and high-level people who don't report to me, but I need them to do things for me, right? And it's forming a relationship, understanding what their personal professional goals are, how you can help them accomplish those things. And you are essentially working for them to help remove barriers. And so I think people mostly go wrong with, you know, I'm going to lead through force. I'm going to lead through authority, which you really don't have, versus I'm going to step in the back and lead from the back and guide. And then when authority is needed, you can lean into that energy. But most times people are very hierarchical, especially at Medtronic and especially some other places. You don't want to ever get into this conversation of, well, you're not my manager. Like, you don't want it. You want it to be more collegial, but you also want to be seen as the leader.
And being seen as the leader is built differently than what some of us intuitively think it is. It's not necessarily positional authority or because I have the loudest voice or because I'm, you know, I can be more forceful than someone else. Those are actually things that could backfire.
They do. They backfire all the time. And you can maybe force someone or overspeak someone into something one, maybe two times, and then they're done. And you're not going to re-win that trust, and you're not going to get them to do what it is that you need them to do, because they're just going to look for an out, or they're just not going to pay attention anymore. And leadership is really more, it has nothing to do with the title. It has nothing to do with positional power. Those things are ornaments on a Christmas tree, frankly. Leadership is creating space where people understand that they're safe, that there are resources, that there's somebody that has their back, that there is a direction. And I have found over my careers, people are less concerned with if they win or lose than they are with the leader. If they felt like this is a strong leader and this is a great leader and they just made a wrong bet, they'll still go with that leader again versus somebody who was boisterous and forceful and made a wrong bet. They'll be like, yeah, I told you they weren't good. I told you they were going to mess up.
That's a really good point. I remember reading an article years ago that talked about strategy and goals. And that is what you just said. They had isolated in that article about whether or not a strategy was likely to succeed. And it was much more likely to succeed if people bought into it and believed in the leader, like you said, and the way that they had built that support, regardless of whether it was the best strategy or not.
Yes.
Which is really interesting, because it seems like, I think they were making the point that when you win their hearts and minds, it may not be an A++ strategy. It's good enough to succeed. But the key is that your people buy into it, and the people that you need to influence are bought in, and then they can fill in the gaps sometimes.
Yeah. And oftentimes they will. And I remember I worked for a particular person at Medtronic, and I really enjoyed working for them. But they had an idea once, and I was like, in my head, I was like, I don't know if this is going to work, but I also felt like I'm going to do everything I possibly can that's within my power to make this work. And you're going to find that people will go above and beyond and do the little bit extra if they believe in you, if they feel like, I know that this person's mind and heart and intent is in the right place.
Mm-hmm. You know, a conflict that comes to mind that's as old as the dawn of time, it seems, is there are patterns of conflict behavior between sales reps and clinical specialists, the folks that help cover the cases and educate the doctors and the patients and things like that. And I just remember being in human resources in corporate America and having, that was almost always on my plate, was there was a conflict going on that the manager needed my help, my guidance, you know, some insight, you know, or just at this point, by the time it got to me, sometimes it was just, this is over. Somebody's got to get off the boat at this point, you know? And it was always sad that it got to that point, you know? So if we were to put some concrete sort of framework around what we're talking about, when it comes to that particular relationship, and you talk about influencing without authority and winning the hearts and minds, practically, how would you coach a sales rep to do that with, let's say, two or three CSs on his team that are maybe not wanting to go the same direction?
Yeah, excellent question. And you're right. That conflict was, it's age old, and it got hairy. And I've seen some great sales rep and clinical relationships,
absolutely,
right? But more often, absolutely, like you said, it ended up in HR. And I would say, first of all, is as the sales rep, first understand what you want to accomplish as a sales rep, right? Like, if you're trying to be rep of the year, if you're trying to be, you know, win President's Club, you know, I think every sales rep is probably trying to do that. But you understand that, embrace fully that it is a team effort. And I think where I saw it go wrong, that was the first place where I saw it go wrong, is it's me, I'm doing this, I'm carrying the region on my back, I made these relationships. It's a team effort. Yes, you led the team. You came up with the strategy and you did all the things, but it's still a team effort. And I think one, it's removing ego from that, removing ego from that dynamic. And that's something that I had to do even before I got to the field. And I'm grateful that somebody brought that to my attention, by the way, before I got to the field, but I had to release ego, right? Like, this is a team effort and we're all trying to accomplish something. The second thing is understanding the clinical specialist needs. You know, some clinical specialists are like, hey, I just want to be a clinical specialist. This is where I'm good. I don't want to be a rep. I don't want to do these things. I want to live in this space. That does not mean, however, that they don't want to be developed. And I think that that's the second place where I saw that relationship go wrong, is not understanding what their professional needs are. Because many places you can go from like being a clinical specialist one to being a clinical specialist three or some sort of order of magnitude. So they want to be recognized. They want to be rewarded. They want to be sure that the things that they need to go up that ladder within the clinical specialist space is there for them. So understanding that. And then the third thing where I think it goes wrong is, or the challenge is, sales reps need to release, I might strike some chords here, need to release a bit of control. Sales reps sell. Clinical specialists should cover cases. I know that that doctor is your favorite doctor and he only wants you there, or she only wants you there, but sales reps need to hunt and clinical specialists can cover cases. So releasing some of that control and building and having trust in those clinical specialists. I think those are the three things that I would say. I would say some of the smaller things are maybe like personality conflicts where I've never really subscribed to liking or disliking people. Like, we should respect the people that we worked with, that we work with. But I would say, yeah, you might have some personality conflicts, but I would say that those are the three areas that I would counsel and coach sales reps on.
That is so good, Niall. I wish I had you when I was in corporate America to help me sort through some of these things, because I think it's just so spot on. I can think of in my head certain individuals, certainly not all, and certainly not even the majority, but some individuals that I ended up dealing with were so incredibly ego-driven as reps. And, you know, some of them came out of some very difficult personal circumstances that they forged ahead and fought through and overcame, and they viewed it as, I did this, you know, I made it out of a, you know, really tough situation. Some of the very best reps have overcome incredible personal obstacles, tragedies in their lives, you know, and it's made them part of who they are. But also that ego piece that goes along with that sometimes ends up really being the thing that they've got to develop past or grow in, because it turns a lot of people off too.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to coalesce and build a coalition behind what they're trying to achieve in their territory. And they just, you can see it because they turn over CSs all the time, You know, that person can work with them for 2 or 3 years and that's it. And they're just ready to be gone, you know? And so there's some personal growth, it sounds like, introspection. Trying to think about the other person, and be very good about thinking about the doctors and their needs, and even the staff and their needs.
Yeah.
But when it comes to their team, that can be a real challenge.
Yeah, and it's important.
But I thought,
sorry to interrupt, but I love what you said, like about some sales reps have come through some harrowing circumstances, and they absolutely have. And I mean, I've talked to sales reps who had some amazing stories, and I'm like, I can't believe you did that. And so those stories that become a part of their armor. And it becomes the armor, and it's important that you wear the armor, but do not get trapped in the armor.
Yeah. Oh, that's good too. That's good. See, ladies and gentlemen, this is why Niall Harris ought to be on your list of coaches and personal consultants. You talk about development, and I think that is so underrated and such a powerful motivator when you're trying to influence people without authority that are on your team. because everybody's got different goals professionally. Mm-hmm. You know, some of those CSs may want to try to become a rep. Some of those folks have no intention of ever being a rep, but would like to grow yet and still maybe into a training education position, mm-hmm. or they might want to go for an associate marketing role someday or something else, maybe not even that. How do you begin to draw that out with people and make it not seem disingenuous or, you know, they're kind of going down a checklist and if they, you know, people aren't computers, you don't push A and B and get C, the result you want. How do you suggest beginning that conversation if you're a rep that maybe never took an interest in them or their professional goal?
It's real difficult if you've never had a conversation with them, right? unfortunately, if you've never had a conversation with them, I'm going to start with telling you to have a conversation
I'm thinking more like they never took an interest until now. All of a sudden, it's pretty obvious that this rep is now the territory leader. They're the big dog. They're you know, the one that's going to bring home the bacon, and they've got, you know, the big accounts or whatever. And now they really are going to need everybody's support.
Yeah.
And they weren't known for that before, maybe.
Yeah. So I think development just in general, right? Whether you are in sales or in-house or clinical, whatever, I think development tends to get overlooked quite a bit. I think when you get to, I think it's a little strange that it's when you get to maybe the director or the VP level, then they'll start to give you more development resources when you probably need them before that point as an emerging leader. And so one of the best ways to try to get at what someone is, what they're actually trying to do is a built-in to the actual process. And I think that this process gets done, either not done or done wrong in the field. And that's just the review. And it shouldn't be the annual review. I can't really stand that term, annual review, but the review itself should be part, yep, this is what you did. This was your performance. And then the next part of it should be, this is, you know, where is it that you're trying to go? And what are the things that we need to get in place to help you get there? So it's performance versus development. So your past, what you did, in your future, what you want to do, and what are the adjustments that we need to make? That's a natural course. And I think I recall most people in the field didn't have a review, didn't have a regular form of feedback, right? Because their feedback was their daily sales report.
Right.
So mm-hmm. I think, one, if you want to be that leader and want to be seen as that leader, then taking that opportunity that's already built in to provide feedback, and feedback should be delivered in by saying, what did you think, you know, went well? What did you think didn't go well? This is what I would like to see done differently. Give them an opportunity to speak. And then it naturally progresses into, well, what do you want to do? How can I help you? What are the things that you want to prepare? And if they're like, well, I want to go into education. Well, great. Have you talked to Stacy in education? Right. Do you know what that means? Hey, let me connect you to so-and-so. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be, you know, and I think people sort of build that conversation up in their minds. And it can be 15 minutes. It can be 20 minutes. It could just be making introductions to other people on their behalf.
Absolutely. Yeah. Creating linkages. And now you're seeing as someone that's seen as someone that takes an investment in their career, is helping them, like you said, connect in with resources and people, networks that they may not have or know, you know, or wouldn't even think of approaching, because they may be a little intimidated by that or something like that. And great advice. Excellent points altogether. Release a little bit of control.
Yeah.
Talk to me about that. That's a hard one. That is really
It's really, really difficult for them because, and I get it, they put blood, sweat, and tears into building up this account. You know, how much windshield time, you know, how much up and, you know, up at 2 a.m, I get it. And the part about how do you release the control and build the trust in other people, part of it developing them is developing them into what your customer needs. So develop the clinical specialist into what that customer needs so that they become a proxy for you, right? They're clinically sound, otherwise they wouldn't be covering cases. If it's those little things, that little things that you do, teach that to the clinical specialist. And you can always also follow up with your doc afterwards. But releasing that control is very, very scary. And just do it a little bit at a time. I once was working at, when I was a therapy development specialist, one of our reps was going to be out for a little bit. And a clinical specialist clinical specialist was going to be covering that territory for a little bit. And I was actually there sitting between them and the door of the control room while the clinical specialist ran the case. And I would not let the rep go into the room. And I was like, let them cover it. Let them cover it. And they were like, but no, he's not going to, I was like, he'll do it. And then he, you know, positions himself or writes on the screen, whatever he's supposed to do. And the clinical specialist did amazing and is actually forming a great relationship with that person. Huh. Now, everybody can't have somebody to block the door of the control room for them.
But,
you know, just do it a little bit of a time. Just have them cover a case while you're there.
I love what you talked about being a proxy for them when they're in the account. So now you've multiplied your efforts. You've multiplied your ability to extend that excellent service offering that you would offer yourself if you were there, but you can't be everywhere at once, especially in a really busy territory. So they've got to do it for you. They've got to be your face. And if you do it right, you know, you've actually made your life a lot easier and you can be more productive.
Yes.
To win. Win for everybody, and they get developed. It's a win-win-win. And I know I've kind of mentioned the bad examples here so far, but there are excellent, excellent territory managers who do this. I mean, just intuitively grasp and understand a lot of what we're talking about, where they're taking people and they're sitting down with them. They're having, I don't know, a meeting once a quarter even, taking them out to eat and just sitting down and talking through that person's own professional development. And they almost own it. They say, you know, I mean, obviously they want the person to own their own professional development, but they're almost playing a role in saying, let's really get you ready. And it's really cool. I remember multiple examples I can think of where when a position became open to be a rep or there was another position, I would get emails from reps who were saying, I have been doing X, Y, and Z with my CS for the last 3 years, and he or she is ready for this. Let me tell you what we've done. And it was just so cool because they were all, most of the time they were absolutely spot on right. They were ready to take on a new role and they had been developed. And it, and the district manager's life was easier because he had a rep doing that with this group of people. Because some people have spans of control. There's 17 to 22 people. They can't do that with everybody.
Absolutely. Yes. And let me tell you, nobody cheers for you like a sales rep cheers for you.
Oh, yeah.
And I know this, like my region, I'm going to say my region was fantastic. I'm a little biased, but they were, all of the reps were very much into developing the CSs. And we always naturally, whenever there was a sales meeting, or whatever sort of event, we always just naturally sat at the same table. We always naturally sat together. We didn't plan it. We would just look for each other. We'd save seats for each other. We were a unit. We were a team. You know, we could talk trash about each other, but nobody could talk trash about us, right? Mm-hmm. And we were always the number one, number two, sometimes number three, but the top region almost every quarter, almost every year, to three President's Club winning reps every year. And these were arguably some of the strongest, best reps. And they sort of mastered this team dynamic. And when I was ready to move back in house, I'll tell you, nobody cheered for me more. Nobody got on the phone for me more. Nobody sent more emails more or text messages more than the reps in that region.
Oh yeah. That's great. That's great. That's fantastic. If you deliver for them, they will absolutely champion you.
Absolutely.
And that's just great to hear. You've done so much since leaving, you know, the world of implantable medical devices and all of that. You branched out. I think you've done work in the education field and the nonprofit field and all of that. You know, give us a little insight into what you've been doing there. And then if you see some things that you've seen done on the outside world of device, tell us what we could be doing different in the world of device from some of these other things that you've
learned. Yeah, that's a great question. So after leaving Medtronic, embarked into a sort of passion project, which was K-12 mm-hmm. education. At the time, it was called the Broad Residency for Urban School System Management, but that's since been taken over by Yale School of Management. And so they put us in schools. So we sort of do what we did in industry and we do it in schools. While it was great and I loved it, and I'm going to circle back to answer this question, it wasn't the best fit. Like, I missed life sciences. I missed medical device. But I wanted to explore other ways to be in medical device. So I ended up working at a small consultancy where we worked with some, big implantables, startups, things like that. And then I started doing some independent on my own. And that's when I started getting into coaching and sort of some of this, working with emerging leaders and working with executives to in the space to really help, bring about some of what I saw when I was in K-12. And in K-12 education, they do a lot of coaching, They coach teachers, they coach the leaders, and there is a lot of crucial conversations, and it's direct. I refer to it as radical and inconvenient truth, but it's done well, right? <Yeah. laughs> And so I would remember being in these meetings where people would sort of call other people to the carpet, like pretty quickly, and which was very different from being in medical device, because it might take 15, 20 minutes for somebody to sort of call you to the carpet, right? But this directness saved a lot of time, and it saved a lot of churn, and you knew what you were talking about. They were like meeting agendas. And it was just very different in how it was organized. But the coaching is what struck me. Teachers had a coach. Teacher coaches had coaches. Principals had coaches. And there was constant feedback. And then people could pivot. There was feedback throughout the year. And that's when I started to really dislike this annual review of feedback, because people were getting feedback every week, every month, every quarter, and you got to the end of the year and you weren't necessarily surprised by anything you saw or heard in that review. And I wanted to carry that forward, especially having these really crucial conversations and being direct without, pushing back, but not pushing down.
Interesting. It sounds like in that world, there's direct feedback that's pretty quick and pretty blunt. And lots of people have coaches. Like a lot of people have coaches.
Yes. Development.
Sounds like nearly everybody.
Yeah. Nearly everybody. And it's not unusual, right? And so I think when we sort of reflect back, I started doing coaching on my own when I was at Medtronic. I used to go out to this program, and every summer it was like a week-long program. It was in the woods outside of Vancouver. And this was very you were in the experience. This wasn't PowerPoints. We were physically climbing mountains and doing stuff and things. And that really worked for me. But I think that people see feedback and they see coaching as there's something deficient with you. And so you're getting a coach because there's something wrong with you. Whereas now I saw this other thing was, well, everybody needs a coach. Everybody needs feedback. Everybody needs help. Like, you wouldn't have the Bulls and no coach, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And so I think that was very different. And so I tried to bring that in where you shouldn't have to be at the director level, the VP level, to be given an executive coach or to be given those developments. Yeah,
that's such a good point, because when you think about, maybe I'm beating this illustration to death, but when you think about territory managers that are responsible for, $5 million worth of or more of revenue to the company, that's a very valuable person. And you would really want that person to be putting forth their best effort every single day and be becoming the best person at work or outside of work that they could be, because who knows what they can deliver. They're already incredibly important to your ecosystem and your organization and what you're trying to do. You know, that's something that I think is also underappreciated a lot of times, is these folks are really, really valuable.
Yeah. And so if you equate them, like, you know, I'm from Chicago, so I'm a Bulls person. Mm-hmm. So if you equate this person bringing in this amount of revenue to being Michael Jordan, you're telling me you're not going to do whatever you can to help Michael Jordan become better, to evolve, to help the people and players around him? Of course you would. Yeah. So why are you not providing that same level of coaching to these folks who are carrying an immense amount of your revenue? And that would be, to me, that after I left and came back, because I did eventually come back into implantable medical device. I was actually working on an independent consulting project, and they liked the work so much that they hired me. I was I was there for a little bit. But that was one of the things that I kind of always thought was strange, is like, you have these key players and you're kind of leaving them out there to their own device. But I did not think about that until I went into education and then came back. Because you would not leave a teacher in a classroom without some coaching.
Well, and the very best ones seek it out, right? The reps will seek out their own professional development. Certain ones will. You know, but a lot of them don't. They kind of get what they get, and then they don't have, you know, time, or they don't build time in for professional development and self-development, which means they begin to stagnate, unfortunately.
Well, I think the ones that seek it out are the ones who evaluate themselves on more than just numbers.
Yes. Oh, that's a good point. That's a really good point. Yep. They're like, am I getting better every day? Mm-hmm. And how am I getting better every day?
Right.
And doing this.
Yeah. If they're just like, oh, I hit my number, I blew out my number. Those folks, even though they're great and fantastic at hitting that number, they're probably, if that's how they view themselves and value themselves, they're probably not going to get the coaching. But if they're like, hey, I blew out my number, but what else could I be doing?
Right. Or I blew out my number, but I know in the back of my mind, there's a lot of luck involved in this.
Yes.
I worked really hard, but some things really fell in my lap. And anybody who's in sales knows, and I'm in sales too now and have been for at least 11 years. We all know there are certain gifts we get from above at times.
Yes, for sure.
You know, let me ask you on a practical level, what can people be doing to drive their own self-development? And get, maybe if their company isn't providing that or doesn't have the resources or just really isn't making the effort, what can they be doing to grow in their role in Topeka, Kansas, or, you know, Salt Lake City or Chicago, Illinois, wherever they are, running a big territory, big robust territory, and they're tasked with numbers and things like that, but they still have, and they know they have this need and this desire for self-development. What can they do?
Yeah, well, you know, first, ask your employer, right? Because what I see a lot is people don't ask if those resources are even available. I put my hand up, like in my last role, I was like, hey, this was really interesting, but I had unexpected brain surgery in 2021. I had a rather large tumor, and so even though I started this company, my sort of start was really sort of messy, right? I had surgery, I had to have radiation. So I asked for a coach that could help, you know, help me get my stuff together, right? Because I was sort of all over the place and I needed some, you know, an external person who was not my manager. And that help was provided. So a lot of times we just need to ask the resource that already exists. But let's say there's no budget, there's nothing like that. Even though most leaders do have professional development built into their budget, let's just go ahead and say it's not there.
Right, right. Yeah.
So then you can ask your colleagues. So here, I was rejected from every business school I applied to the first year I applied. Huh. And so I then sought out people who were where I wanted to be. I wanted to be at the University of Michigan. So I started talking to people who got into the University of Michigan. What did you do? Can you read my essay? What do you think about this? How should I position this? I started speaking to the administrative people at the University of Michigan, and I resubmitted an application that was a better profile, and I got in, and I'm really oversimplifying that story. But the point is, figure out who's where you want to be and go talk to those people. Find out what they're doing. There are a number, just get on your computer. And I know for sales reps, a lot of time in the car and they always feel like, I don't have the time for this. Make time.
Right.
Make time, period. Make time and find resources. There's, I have free resources. Other people have free resources. Other people have paid resources. Other people have coaches. Get a recommendation for a coach, a referral to a coach. But there's also things like masterclass. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be about sales. And I think also that's where people are like, well, if I want to be developed in sales and I have to focus on sales development, gurus or people or material, but you also want things that challenge your thinking. It's sort of like when I went into education, I didn't know people had coaches. I didn't know development was really that big of a thing until I did something else. So you can seek out those resources.
Yeah.
But I think it's going to take, you have to make time, whether that's 3 hours a week, an hour a week. I know you can commit because you committed to these numbers and you've made them. So I know you can commit.
That reminds me of a good friend of mine that I'd love to get on the podcast. He's a little shy, but he is a wealth of experience and as a sales manager and leader of people and all that. But I remember him telling me there's a group in Texas called the Silver Fox. I think it's Silver Fox Coaching Association or something like that, where they pair younger managers with very experienced, very successful leaders. It's not cheap, but I think his employer helped pay part of it. He paid part of it, but he got paired with a guy that had been uber successful, but not in medical devices. He'd done something else. And he told me that was the single biggest thing in his professional development that he ever did. It changed. The guy had, he's such wisdom and such insight from a completely different perspective and different industry and all that stuff. But just the kind of questions the guy would ask him about how he was running his business or doing his business has made a tremendous difference in the guy's professional life and personal life. And he said it was worth every single penny and way more than what he paid for it, And that was just, that was this medical device sales manager that sought that out on his own and then got his company to pay for it. So there's one small example of it. So I think that's great. One other topic I wanted to touch base with you, because you've done it, you went from the field to being in-house, and that had to be quite a transition for you, even though you had all the skill sets to do it. And I think you'd been in-house and then you went in the field and then you came back in. But how would you advise people or help coach people who want to go from the field to an in-house position? I think that would round out their experience professionally.
Yeah. So, I began my career in financial services and then and sort of tripped into medical device. So I was in-house in a corporate role, making PowerPoints and Excel and all this, and transitioned into the field, totally terrified. And luckily I had great trainers. So when you're in the field, and if you've spent your entire career in the field, I've had people speak to me about this and like, hey, I've spent my entire career as either a CS or a rep, even as a, a territory manager, a sales leader. And one of the things that, it's not the same. It's just not the same life. And I think first is if that's something that you want to do, give yourself some runway to understand that it is the same company and an entirely different culture. If you want to meet with me, you need to put time on my calendar. Sales reps are not used to that, right? So just those sort of adjustments of just integrating into that culture. Understand what that is, those differences are, get a sense for that. The second thing is, when I transitioned into the field, having a trainer. So get somebody who, if it's a product manager, hopefully is a person in sales that you've built good relationships with your marketing folks, right? get with that product manager. I spoke to lots of the sales reps. I would go out in the field all the time when I transitioned into being a product manager. And I would go out in the field. I was still out there. And as a product manager, having been in the field first, I did all of my work through a different lens. All of my collateral was just through an entirely different lens. But I built those relationships. Mm-hmm. So hopefully as a sales rep, you've built those relationships. If not, start now. And then spend time with that product manager, mm-hmm. right? Either invite them out to your territory.
Yeah.
Or mm-hmm. go like, hey, I'm going to be in the office. Can we spend some time? Walk me through this. How do you prepare for a launch? Like, what are you guys doing? Get introduced to people. If it's going into marketing, get introduced to all of the people that deal, like the R&D person, the supply chain person, right? Start integrating yourself into that environment well before you want to do it, because what I have seen with the people who make that transition, that's the toughest part. It's not a lack of knowledge, a lack of skill, a lack of drive. Right. It's that mm-hmm. culture shock change. Because we're the same company. We're even the same business unit, but we don't operate at all the same.
Different culture. I thought that was good. Same company, but going to be a different work.
It's going to be a different
work. In a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a lot of different.
And then also, like, if you're transitioning into marketing, get, you know, if I know somebody who went from being a district manager to being a marketing director, and he spent, I want to say probably 2 years just on the front end of that.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, it's just such great experience for someone to do it, but it has its own inherent differences, and got to be aware of those and try to have as much of your eyes wide open going into that role. I remember seeing certain sales reps transition up into marketing roles or training roles or whatever, and you could just tell they were miserable. Mm-hmm. They were just, they wanted to be out. They wanted to be out in their car driving around. They wanted to be going to accounts. They wanted to be doing other things. And this was just not the job
that they thought it was going to be. And that's why I say go visit. Go visit an office, because I promise you, we're just at our desks working.
That's what we do.
That's
great. Niall, it's such a pleasure to have you on. I tell you, we probably got to land the plane on this interview, but I would love to have you back and share more of your expertise with the audience. I know people had just a lot of value out of it. Thank you for being on.
Yeah, thank you for the invitation. It was great to catch up. And, you know, I love talking about building high-performing teams. I'm happy to come back anytime.
That's great. You should start your own, too.
We could be co-hosts.
Absolutely, absolutely. Thanks again, Niall. Good talking to you, too. Thank you for joining us on the Chase MedSearch Podcast. I hope that you gained some helpful insight from today's episode. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe so you don't miss future episodes, and give us a like on your favorite streaming platform. It really helps grow our audience. For more information on Chase MedSearch, visit our website at chasemedsearch.com. Thanks again for joining us. Until next time, I'm Jordan Chase, and this has been the Chase MedSearch Podcast.